You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. What seems like a gazillion years ago, but was probably more like 10 or 12, I interviewed a guest for my Village Voice column. I was doing a story about circumcision, and that's who my guest is today. She taught me so much about the foreskin and circumcision that it changed my views permanently. And I have her to thank. And so I'm so glad that we've reconnected after all these years. She's doing the work, continues to do the work. Let me tell you about her. Georgianne Chapin has dedicated her life to promoting human rights and fighting injustice. Georgianne is a leader in the growing national movement to end routine circumcision of baby boys. 12 years ago, she co-founded and became executive director of Intact America, the largest national organization working to end child genital cutting in this country and to ensure healthy sexual futures for all people. Prior to that, she founded the Hudson Center for Health Equity and Quality, which she also currently heads, and is the former president and CEO of Hudson Health Plan, a large nonprofit Medicaid-managed care organization in the Hudson Valley in New York. She has her MPhil in sociomedical sciences from Columbia and her JD from Pace University School of Law. And she lives in a place I once called home, the Hudson Valley. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Georgianne.
Thank you so much, Tristan. It's a pleasure for me to reconnect with you also. I'm really excited about this show.
I know, we're still here and we're still
doing it. Yeah, really, that's true. It would be nice if we didn't have to do this work, you know, but right. if everybody was enlightened, you know, but here we are, and it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you and to your listeners.
So I want to give people some context, first of all, that a lot of people don't know this, but no professional medical association in the United States or the rest of the world recommends routine circumcision. People in Europe, Asian, and Latin America, where 90% of men are not circumcised, which is also known as intact, and suffer no negative consequences because of it, they're in fact shocked to hear that American doctors and hospitals remove part of a boy's penis shortly after birth. So, you know, I think a lot of people in the United States kind of live in this bubble where we believe that what we do, either everyone else does or what we do is better than what everyone else does. It's kind of the American way. But let's break it down. Let's first talk about penises, anatomy, and what actually gets removed during circumcision.
Sure. So it's really fascinating how many people have no idea what the natural penis, how many Americans have no idea what the natural penis is, and therefore have no idea what this sort of vague medical sounding term circumcision even means. But circumcision, male circumcision, is a sexual surgery that removes the prepuce, or the foreskin by cutting it off. And the prepuce is an integral part of the penis. It protects the penis. It protects the head of the penis, which is called the glands, and the urinary opening, which is called the meatus. It protects it from urine and infection in babies before they become continent. And it protects the head of the penis in men from abrasion, from injury. And it also has, as one can imagine, an extremely important sexual function.
So it's routinely done in the United States. And there it's sort of buttressed by several different arguments, which I'm hoping you can bust some of these myths, because many of the quote reasons people do circumcision are actually not based in science, not medically accurate, not real. So I'm gonna lay out some arguments for circumcision, and I just want to hear you talk about why these don't make sense. So some people say that if you circumcise a penis, it's easier to clean because nothing gets like stuck in the foreskin.
Right. Well, as I described, the foreskin is in an infant is attached to the head of the penis. So there's nothing to clean except what you see, any more than, you need to rip your fingernail off in order to clean your fingers. The foreskin protects the penis, and any urine or lint or a little smegma, which is just a natural bodily fluid, just as natural as saliva or mucus, that might gather around the end of the foreskin can simply be rinsed off, just like you would rinse off, if your baby's drooling, you'd rinse the saliva off his chin, right? So there's no need to, and in fact, it's so counterintuitive. A lot of what, I'm going to talk about, if you can strip back your cultural blindfold that we all carry around, every culture has its common wisdom, which isn't all that wise. It doesn't make any sense, to take, in order to be clean, you have to inflict an open wound on a baby, and that open wound is then going to be encased in diapers where urine and feces reside also. How can that possibly be hygienic? As far as later hygiene in life, we believe that we can raise our children to do all kinds of wonderful things. They can become, teachers and poets and sex educators and talk show hosts, neurosurgeons, professional athletes, but somehow you're never going to be able to teach a boy to wash his penis. So the absurdity of the hygiene argument doesn't take long to comprehend.
And what about the folks who say, oh, it's not a big deal. Children don't feel pain in the same way we do. They won't even remember it.
Well, that would mean that raping a baby girl would probably be no big deal because she won't remember it. And she doesn't feel pain. So, hey, what's the problem? Any mom knows that babies feel pain. I sometimes ask people, okay, so let's say baby feels no pain. At what point does a baby begin to feel pain? Because I remember when my son, who's 40, was a baby, I had one of those little zip-up snugglies on him and he was screaming and I kept trying to figure out what was going on. And I looked and the zipper was all the way up, and it was the little zipper tab, instead of being flat, was sticking straight up into his neck, and he was tiny, he was just a few days old, right? So how on earth can It's the stupidest thing in the world to say a baby doesn't feel pain. And thankfully, we actually have some research on that, which shows that babies who are circumcised experience pain that I mean, as observable by monitoring brainwaves, as well as, of course, by facial observing their faces. But that the pain, the response to pain is exaggerated in a baby who was circumcised for up to several months or years, and they experience subsequent interventions like vaccinations or other things with much more distress than babies who were not circumcised. So that's also completely absurdist. For the not remembering everything that happens, I mean, I think that our society's begun to realize that even prenatal experiences can be remembered subconsciously, sometimes even consciously. I have no trouble believing. I've heard so many stories of people who remember very, very, very early life experiences. And it's laid down somewhere in the brain, a trauma like what I described. So the not remembering, I mean, just because someone doesn't remember something doesn't give you license to violate their autonomy and their body. So that's also an absurd argument.
Now, people also
let me just also mention that tell that to, you know, to the men who are in ongoing distress about their circumcisions. What are you complaining about? You know, how could you possibly remember this? I mean, it's just such an absurd contention.
People also make the argument that people with penises that are circumcised are less susceptible to STI transmission. Also, I recall a study more than a decade ago, I think it was done in Africa, where they circumcised a bunch of African men and HIV rates went down. So then they began applying that as a universal, that this could decrease your chances of getting HIV. What about that?
That's very complicated, because the studies that have resulted in these claims were unethical from their inception. They didn't, you know, there were studies that could never be conducted in the US. And yes, it appears if you have confidence in the survey methods, the study methods, that there might be a very slight reduction in transmission from HIV positive women to HIV negative men, but not the other way around. And this 60% that's cited is not, it's a very misleading number. I could go into it at length, but let me just give you a kind of straightforward illustration. So if the chances of a man getting a disease from one sexual encounter is, say, 1 in 10,000, if he is circumcised, and I'm sorry, intact, and the chances of him getting it is 0.4 in 1,000 if he's intact, if he's circumcised, that's a, yes, it's a 60% relative risk reduction, but that doesn't mean he's 60% less likely to get HIV or another sexually transmitted disease. It's extremely misleading. He's basically guaranteed with repeated exposure, whether he's circumcised or not, to get a sexually transmitted disease. There is no research in the US that shows any of these results. Not for HIV, not for syphilis, not for gonorrhea. There have been studies in the military that do not show any difference in transmission of sexually transmitted illnesses in circumcised versus non-circumcised men. And then I think we should always remember that the HIV epidemic took root and exploded in the United States among gay men at a time when almost every adult male in this country lacked a foreskin, had been circumcised as a child. Cemeteries are full of men who had no foreskins and who died from AIDS. So that is an absurd argument. And from an ethical standpoint, I could say a lot about the ethics of these studies in sub-Saharan Africa. That's a whole other program. But from an ethical standpoint, you know, babies are not having sex. Babies cannot consent to this so-called preventive surgery. And so that argument is another terrible argument for circumcision.
Now, I've heard some folks say that they decided to circumcise their boy, their infant boys, because boys should look like their dads, or like other boys around them are going to tease them mercilessly, or girls or their other boy sexual partners are going to freak out when they see their foreskin. This notion of sort of being different and that being a bad thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, what if your kid has a mole on his lip, you know, or it's so absurd, really. I mean, for one thing, people don't walk around naked. Yeah, there's the whole locker room thing. I mean, it's this proverbial locker room is kind of almost funny at this point. You've got to remember that that's maiming your son in order to make him fit in. So, you know, if the father is missing an eye from an accident, would you poke out your son's eye? You know, I had a classmate when I was in junior high school, I'll never forget, who was missing part of two of his fingers because he worked in his father's deli and he had sliced them off in a meat slicer. And so I remember starting to think about circumcision, thinking, I wonder if this kid Nicky is going to have the ends of his son's fingers removed so that they'll look like him. You know, it's just, and then of course, if that were really a great argument, everybody would be intact because men have been intact throughout human history. So at some point, somebody decided to make that boy not look like his father. If you leave your son intact, then your grandchildren will look like their father, right? So It's, again, just a kind of a crazy argument. My son has, you know, told me about this discussion when he was a teenager. And I said, what did you say? Somebody said something about, you know, not being circumcised. And he said, I just said, you know, you're the one that's missing something.
Right. Okay. We are going to take our first commercial break. I want to acknowledge that there is another argument around cultural and religious practices, which we are going to get into, but later in the show. That's a more complicated one. So I want to acknowledge that for listeners that I haven't forgotten about that, but we're going to get into it later. First, we're going to take a commercial break and we'll be back in 2 minutes. The events of this year have bound us together in ways we could have never imagined 12 months ago. They've shown us what it looks like to sacrifice for the greater good and reminded us that we are all deeply interconnected. I have relied on meditation and mindfulness more than ever. I use Calm, the app designed to help you ease stress and get better sleep. If you feel anxious, exhausted, burned out, that's totally normal. We all need to up our game with tools for stress relief and resilience. Calm helps me do just that with its soundscapes, guided meditations, and sleep stories. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering a special limited time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's hundreds of hours of programming, Calm's entire library, and new content added every week. Get started today at calm.com/TRISTAN for 40% off a premium subscription. That's calm.com/Tristan. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I would love to know your thoughts, your opinions about circumcision. Were you circumcised? Have you circumcised your baby boys or babies born with penises. Would love to hear your take on this really sensitive issue that a lot of people have very strong feelings about. You can call us anytime at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I'm back with Georgianne Chapin, who is the executive director of Intact America, the largest national organization working to end child genital cutting in this country. Before the break, we talked about circumcision and we also the procedure, and we also talked about reasons people give for why they circumcise their infants. I want to shift gears and talk about the foreskin. I liked that comment from your son, who when someone questioned him about like, why does your penis look different than mine? And he was like, why are you making fun of me? Like you're the one who lost something. So when your publicist recently got in touch with me, I think the subject line was something like, women need to know about foreskins and here's why. And of course, I think everyone, regardless of gender, needs to know about foreskins. But if you don't have one or you don't have a penis, often you're a little bit oblivious to it. And you are absolutely an intactivist, which is what folks are called who oppose circumcision and support people leaving penises intact. You're pro foreskin. So let's talk about what is so great about the foreskin.
Well, the foreskin is a unique body part. It covers the head of the penis, as we said, and it comprises a double-layered mobile tissue, mobile especially in, you know, after in adults, and it has both protective and sexual functions. So the foreskin consists of two layers of skin, an outer layer and an inner layer. It has, it's attached to the shaft of the penis by a frenulum, and the frenulum is the other frenulum in your body, is the one under your tongue, and it's what enables you to sleep on your back without swallowing your tongue. And the frenulum returns the foreskin as it, in an adult or an older male, where it has separated naturally from the head of the penis and it can retract and move back and forth, the frenulum is what returns it to its natural position. The foreskin has on sort of the boundary between the outer and inner layer, the foreskin has a number of ridged bands, and you can literally see them in an intact penis. You can, if you see a photo or even a good sculpture, an erotic sculpture where the foreskin is retracted, you can see these ridged bands, and the ridged bands are loaded with something called Meissner's corpuscles. And Meissner's corpuscles are also found on the tips of your fingers and at the junction between your lips and the inside of your mouth. So if you see a person, you know, like in a sex scene in a movie or a kind of, you know, come on video, like the woman might be licking her lips, you know, she looks at a man and what she's doing is stimulating the Meissner's corpuscles. If you see somebody looking at a plate of delicious food and kind of licking their lips, that's what's going on, is the Meissner's corpuscles. So these are exquisitely sensitive parts of the body. And if you ablate the foreskin, you've ablated those sensitive parts of the penis. The other thing that the foreskin does, which is extraordinarily important, is that it eases and makes intercourse, and it gives pleasure. So whether it's self-pleasuring or whether it's sexual pleasuring with a partner, the foreskin plays an extremely important role in sexual pleasure.
It's got a ton of nerve endings, right?
Yeah, the foreskin is laden with nerve endings, and as I said, and with these Meissner's corpuscles, and it also has a the mechanical function of the foreskin, the gliding action, works in tandem. I mean, the bodies are made to work together. So even though we can have all kinds of sexual experiences, we can have same, you know, auto erotic experiences, experiences with persons of any sex. But the foreskin was designed to work in tandem with the woman's vagina, because that's still the most common, you know, that's been throughout history, the most common way that, well, that's how procreation occurs, right? So the foreskin will move with the vaginal wall and stimulate the vaginal wall in a way that the denuded penis can't, because the denuded penis is lacking that gliding, that extra skin for gliding, and also the lubrication. The foreskin has a lubricating function. So men without foreskins and people having sex where the man's lacking foreskin will often need to use excessive amounts of lubricant in order to achieve that gliding action. So foreskin is just provides, is essential to a maximally pleasurable sex experience.
And does the penis actually lose sensitivity? So I'm thinking, if it's analogous to, say, the clitoral hood. The clitoral hood is removed, and then the clitoral glands is out there with no protection. It's super sensitive. Does a circumcised penis get sort of desensitized because the foreskin is removed?
In general, yes, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. So the glands that have the penis, the glands will become, you know, exposed to the air and to the elements and to underwear and to, abrasion. And okay, there are two things. One is this foreskin is more sensitive than the head of the penis. It's the most sensitive part of the penis. So you've lost all of the foreskins, all the sensation that resides in the foreskin is now gone, right? And then the head of the penis also becomes desensitized. And the head of the penis is not without sensation, but it is far less sensitive than the foreskin, and it becomes desensitized because of, you know, what I've just described.
Well, this also seems to me that this is part of a larger issue in society, especially in the United States, which is that we don't consider sexual pleasure a part of overall health and wellness. So when they're doing these circumcisions, they don't think, oh, we're taking something away here, or we are impacting this person's sexuality for the rest of their life. But because we still devalue sexual pleasure and we don't really put it up there as one of the indicators of good health, again, it gets dismissed as sort of not important.
Right. And it's really very kind of interesting that the kind of internal contradiction here, because we devalue sexual pleasure, yet we're very quick to defend male circumcision by saying it doesn't impact sexual pleasure. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I have done and that Intact America does is very explicitly talk about the origins of circumcision in the United States, where circumcision was started to be promoted in the Anglophone and the English-speaking countries in the Victorian era, in the the second half of the 19th century. And it was promoted as a way of reducing sexual pleasure. The theory was that masturbation and sexual pleasure were bad, and that one way of keeping boys and women who were also mutilated for the same reason from touching themselves and getting too much pleasure and, you know, keeping them from masturbating was to inflict pain on the genitals and remove, in the case of boys, that exquisitely mobile, sensitive, awesome body part. So it's so crazy, really, that
we now have lost that, the fact that the original justification for cutting off boys' foreskins was to make it so that they wouldn't pleasure themselves. And so now American men, doctors and men and male and female doctors who inflict circumcision on boys are desperate to convince you that there is no difference. You know, it's, oh, you, well, you can be circumcised or not. There's no difference. There's really no difference in pleasure. You know, no. And that's just an out and out, a complete lie, right? And the history of the practice is totally lost to the public at this point.
Okay, so you bring up a number of different issues there. Several weeks ago, I had author Farzana Doctor on my show, and we talked about female genital cutting, also known as female circumcision, also known as female genital mutilation. For folks who don't know, that is an umbrella term that covers several practices which remove some part or all of the clitoral hood, sometimes the clitoral glands. It may involve cutting or sewing labia or the vaginal opening, and any other surgical procedure on female genitals with no medical purpose. So globally, the way that female genital mutilation has been positioned, I mean, it is known as female genital mutilation, is that it's about violence, destruction, altering a person's sexuality in these irrevocable ways. Why isn't circumcision, especially in the US, thought of in these same terms?
Because we don't want to think of it that way, only for that reason. And it has something to do, of course, with, you know, a lot of other cultural ideas we have, which is that men are, should be tougher than women. Men are, you know, men are different. I mean, you just, if you say, well, what about the fact we, you know, we condemn female genital cutting and we, you know, well, what about that? And people say, oh, it has nothing to do with this. What is completely different from the other? And then people will launch into, you know, boys don't, you know, they can still have an orgasm. So what's the problem? Or there are medical benefits to it. But it's exactly the same thing. And in fact, and I thought this was interesting. I did hear your show on female genital cutting with the author you mentioned, and towards the end she said, you know, how necessary it is to eradicate female genital cutting, and I believe, and lots of other intactivists understand, that you will never end female genital cutting as long as you continue to promote male genital cutting. So all cultures where males are cut, I mean, where females are cut, also cut males.
Mm-hmm.
Not all cultures where males are cut, cut females, but that's also a cultural artifact. In the United States, we used to cut women. We used to remove the clitoral hood, reduce the size of the clitoris, and some of that actually still goes on now as a medical procedure. It's really very, it's not talked about too much, but it's the same. And let me just, if you don't mind, let me talk about a commonality in both the direct results of genital cutting and the eventual problem that this comes, you know, that this creates later in life. So if you cut a part off a child's genitals, you are impeding the development of sexual pathways. You know, the body is, the genitals are kind of a huge factory of sensation and function, and it's all interrelated. And if you interrupt that by cutting off or removing pieces of it, that interrupts the neural pathways that develop over time. So, you know, the neural pathways, I mean, it's the same kind of pathways that, you know, you have a baby doesn't walk. A baby develops the ability to walk over the first few months of his life by literally laying down these or developing these neural pathways. So if you interrupt that at birth or shortly thereafter or during early childhood, the individual will never have a full and normal sexual response. That doesn't mean the individual won't be able to have intercourse. Doesn't mean the individual, but well, it definitely can impair orgasm. Mm-hmm. But it's a lifelong, you've inflicted a lifelong handicap on somebody by severing that tissue young in life. In addition, of course, to psychological trauma that could inflict the meeting of violence and sex, you know, that early on.
Right. Okay, we're going to take another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about possible intersections here between different kinds of activism around bodily autonomy, attitudes in the United States, and if they're changing. And then we're going to get into some ways that the everyday person might want to address this issue. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hey, vulva owners. Do you want a stronger pelvic floor and stronger orgasms? Well, the two are absolutely related. It's scientifically proven that a stronger pelvic floor can lead to more intense orgasms. You've probably heard of Kegel exercises, the ones you do to strengthen those pelvic muscles, but have you heard of Intensity by Pour Moi? Intensity by Pour Moi is an intimate health and stimulation device. A lot of people may be tempted to call it a vibrator, but it's actually much, much more than that. Yes, it vibrates, and who doesn't love vibration? But what makes Intensity special is how it tightens and tones your pelvic floor muscles. As we age, as we go through childbirth, or even just take a long break from sex play, our pelvic floor muscles weaken. That's just a fact. Most people know Kegel exercises are important. I've had several pelvic floor experts on this show, and one thing they've taught me is that lots of people are doing their Kegels wrong, which means it's not beneficial at all. Intensity helps you do them better by automatically exercising the muscles of the pelvic floor. Muscle stimulation, along with the resistance of the inflatable probe, offers more than just a squeeze. It's like an exercise program. Intensity is manufactured in the USA to medical grade standards. You know that's important to me. I don't want to promote anything that's made of bad materials. Pour Moi is offering our listeners $25 off Intensity when you go to pourmoi.com and enter the code Tristan at checkout. That's $25 off when you go to pourmoi.com and use promo code TRISTAN. pourmoi.com, coupon code Tristan. Pour Moi Intensity, Kegels with a kick. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Intactivist Georgiann Chapin, and we've gotten quite an education. I hope that some of you actually are having some light bulb moments go off, because I know I did when I first heard a lot about this. So I'm wondering, Georgiann, how does your work intersect with a growing movement to stop doctors from medically intervening when someone is born and identified as intersexed?
Well, we are, Intact America opposes medically unnecessary surgery on any child's genitals. So that means girls, boys, intersex individuals, except for absolutely medically necessary procedures, like, for example, if a child's unable to urinate or defecate or, you know, and needs immediate corrective surgery. Other than that, we oppose every alteration of a child's genitals until the time that the child becomes of age to make the decision. You just simply don't know. That said, it's been difficult for Intact America and other intactivist groups to establish alliances with intersex rights organizations and with organizations that work against female genital cutting. And I think one of the reasons for this is that it's still very unpopular in the US to oppose circumcision. Circumcision is a big, to oppose male circumcision. Circumcision is a big industry in this country. It's a part of the fee-for-service medical system, and there is also a tissue sales issue here, which we unfortunately don't know too much about, but we know that foreskin tissue is used by the biotech industry and by the cosmetic industry. So we consider ourselves allies with all of the children's rights organizations that oppose intersex child cutting and female genital child cutting, but we don't have a coalition of all of our organizations. And I think that's unfortunate.
That's fascinating, because to me, this is this is all about consent and bodily autonomy.
Correct.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so all three of these issues, including not just genital cutting for intersex people, but also putting people on hormones.
Yes.
Yes. Deciding what sex that, deciding the sex rather than letting the person grow and make the choice for themselves about what gender they want to be. It's all about consent and autonomy and people being able to make these decisions for themselves. And so it seems to me like, yes, there should be a broad coalition, but you think it what stands in the way is really people's deep investment in this country in penis circumcision.
Yes, unequivocally. Absolutely.
That's frustrating. That's really frustrating.
Yes.
So I want to come back to the argument that circumcision is part of cultural and religious practices, especially in the United States, for American Jews. This is a commonly done practice. It's important. It's a ritual. It's celebrated. And so if we oppose circumcision in all circumstances, we're somehow devaluing or ignoring cultural and religious rights. Where do you fall on that?
I really don't have much patience for that. I have patience for religious beliefs. People can believe anything they want, but I don't have patience for religious practices that injure other people. And lots of American Jews are leaving their boys intact. Customs change over time, religion changes over time, culture changes, and the baby is, if you talk about freedom of religion, a baby has no religion. Mm-hmm. He's not of an age to comprehend religion. If you talk about spiritual experiences, all you have to do is look at a circumcision and that baby's not having a spiritual experience. That baby's having an agonizing time of it. So I just don't have much patience for that. That doesn't mean that I doubt people's belief again, but I don't think you need to inflict an open wound on a baby's penis, no matter what you believe. We also tend to have this false distinction between culture and religion. So I hear these absurd arguments, in Africa, they cut girls, but that's not good, but circumcision's in the Bible, so it's okay. It's just, to me, that's completely absurd.
So slavery, let's just make it a reminder of that.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Right.
That we have sort of, we've adopted and we've changed and we've evolved. And I have read about Jews who are intactivists who talk about sort of completing the ritual without the medical harm. Right, that we can sort of update these rituals as we update other rituals that have been around for centuries. And we can do it in a way that honors this marking of some kind, but without actually cutting.
Right. I think there's another really important thing. The Jewish population in the United States is only about 2%, 2 to 3%.
And most Jews do not engage in ritual circumcision. A lot of secular Jews will either not circumcise or they'll have their son circumcised in the hospital by a doctor. So there's no ritual aspect to it at all. So roughly 99% of the circumcisions that take place in the United States have nothing to do with religion. So this becomes a cover in a way to justify a procedure like, well, you wouldn't want to go against someone's religion, mm-hmm. would you? So
it's like a red herring.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's very problematic. It's a very common, that's the first thing a lot of people say to me, well, what about religion? You know, it's like, well, what, you know, what about it? This is a cultural practice that is part of the culture of the medical industry. And that's a simple truth about circumcision. And everybody suffers as a result of it. Men suffer, boys suffer, men suffer, and couples suffer later in life because literally one of the partners, or sometimes both partners, if they're both males and circumcised, don't have that full sexual experience. And also because of what, you know, the work you do that's so important about, you know, about talking about this stuff and understanding it, people don't understand what is going on as a result of circumcision. So there's so much conflict between men and women about sex, and painful sex is a thing, and men pounding women is, you know, one of those kind of proverbial complaints, you know, why does he have to pound me? And people don't realize that the circumcised male is engaged in all kinds of compensatory behavior because he's missing this incredibly important body part. And sometimes just understanding that, and that's the function of people like you, Tristan, you know, who talk about these things, just being able to understand that is a tremendous relief. Instead of it being like, oh my God, you know, this is, you know, the end of my world. They know there's a problem. Circumcised men who are having sexual problems, they know it. And to hear like, it's not your fault. You know, it's not that you really actually don't, you know, that you don't know how to have sex, or it's not that somehow deep inside you don't really like your wife anymore. It's not any of that. It's that you are trying to, you're engaging in a natural activity, a natural sexual activity with an unnatural penis. And there's a huge price that we all pay in this society for this horrible violation of boys.
So let's get down to a personal level, because in this country, we don't talk about our genitals, our own genitals, regularly.
Right.
So thinking about talking about yours or someone else's baby's genitals seems challenging. But how would you bring this up? The average person with a loved one, with a spouse, with a sibling, with a close friend, if you wanted to impart this information, if you wanted to engage, if you wanted to raise the question, right? Because mm-hmm. The problem here is often the question isn't raised. It's like the doctor or the nurse comes in and says, we're going to do the circumcision, right? Okay, sign here. Okay, done. Right? There's no real discussion. There's no informed consent.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, America recently, you know, did a survey, 2020, this year, about solicitation of circumcision, you know? So we simultaneously don't discuss it, but we sell it, right? Found out that 94% of women in our survey, it was a national survey, random sample survey, 94% of women have given birth to boys in the last 4 years have been solicited to circumcise them. Mm. Only 6% were not. And solicitation was defined broadly, including the presence in the, you know, packet of materials at the hospital of a circumcision consent form. In countries where
this is just what we do.
Yeah. In countries where they don't circumcise, there's no circumcision consent form in the packet.
Right.
So Induct America is, you know, we're trying to look at this from all, we're trying to look at it systemically, like what's the circumcision system and the circumcision machine?
What I say to people, and I've really worked on this a lot over the years, because I think initially two things. One is it was so obvious to me, but it, because I've been thinking about it for so many years, so obvious to me that this was wrong. And also because I tend to be abrupt and outspoken and loud and judgmental. You know,
here's to all of those things. Yeah. Sister, I'm totally with you.
How could you not see that this is mutilation? You know, meanwhile, right. You know, this person, you know, has two circumcised sons, you know. So I think the most important thing is to start with oneself, right? So if you're thinking about this and you have a pregnant sister or sister-in-law or something, say, you know, do you know if you're a boy or a girl? Well, you know, I've been thinking a lot about circumcision, or I had never thought about circumcision at all. And then I heard this radio program and it made me wonder about it. And I've been thinking, and I heard this woman, she has this organization called Infect America. And I checked out the website. It's really interesting. You know, we do this, but we don't think about it. You know, whatever is from you, or if you're a man, right? I mean, one of my favorite things is guys tell me, you know, people say to them, well, I never heard anybody complain about being circumcised. They'll say, well, now you have, you know, I'm complaining, right? Is speak from your experience, or you could even say, yeah, when I first heard about, you know, this Intactivist crap, you know, I thought, well, what the heck? Why don't they find something better to do with their life? And then I started to think, you know what? Maybe they have a point. And I'm not saying these things so anybody can copy what I said. It has to come from the person who's speaking. But there are lots of ways of communicating this, even in a sex-obsessed and simultaneously sex-phobic society. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, maybe in the future, talk more about this whole idea of how you message this stuff, because you're great at messaging what a lot of people want to avoid talking about, and your guests are. So this is a super important question and probably deserves, you know, more attention. So, you know, I or somebody else who's done a lot of thinking about this might be a great future guest.
I mean, I think I want to give the sort of everyday person, you know, I want to give them a plan, a right. piece of action.
Well, they can definitely, you know, go to our website, intactamerica.org, or follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and you'll see all kinds of information, all kinds of backup for things that you might be thinking. We have a column, Voices column, is mostly men who are writing about how they feel about their circumcision experience, about being circumcised. We have women who've talked about, you know, how they feel, you know, how they feel their issues with their partner or having left a child intact or having a child circumcised. So intactamerica.org is a very rich site. We have a Facebook, we have another website called The Circumcision Debate. And that is a great place to start if you're just kind of new to the issue, because it's really a kind of an entry level intactivist site. It provides basic information for people who really don't know much and are just getting curious. And just being able to recommend that or tell other people about that is a good way to start the conversation. And then, you know, the other thing that I always tell people to rely on is common sense. You know, how can it be that cutting a normal body part off a newborn baby, when that body part has evolved, you know, over many, 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 many years, whether you, you know, believe God, you know, put it there or nature put it there, it's a normal body part. And how can it be that half of the population of the U.S., i.e. all boys, are born needing surgical correction? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And that's a very neutral thing to say. You know, you're not accusing anybody. You're not using the word mutilation. It just kind of raises a question that shouldn't fire off a lot of defenses in your listener. If it does, then they just need time. That's the other thing, is give people time to think about it. Mm-hmm. Don't expect to convince somebody who's resisting this message in, you know, in one conversation or two. Or so I've had people come back to me after years of initially dismissing what I had to say about it and saying, you know what, you know, I've been thinking about this. And I get it.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, more education and knowledge is power. I think also, like, we don't mean to shame anyone who is circumcised or who has circumcised their children. It's like, once we know better, we can make other kinds of decisions, and we can make them consciously, rather than the sort of here, sign the form, this is happening. So I think also people who've already had children and thought, okay, did I fuck that up? Did I do the wrong thing? Mm-hmm. Can still become educated and can still be part of a movement to change attitudes for future generations.
Yeah. And, you know, some of this also really, really just requires us to be compassionate, right? Because mm-hmm. there are a lot of people suffering from this, not just circumcised men who are suffering, but their families, their parents, their partners. And it's really important to keep that in mind, that this is not like, this is not like a violent battle we need to be having with each mm-hmm. other. This is a kind of a plea for to see something and to understand it and to help people deal with the consequences of it in a way that is, that's healing and future thinking, because you can't go back.
Amen to that. That sort of applies to a lot of things that are going on in our world right now. So amen to compassion and understanding and healing. Yes. Thanks so much for being on the show. Folks can find you at intactamerica.org. You can also find the organization across all social media platforms at Intact America. Thanks so much, Georgianne.
Thank you, Tristan. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I thank your listeners for their interest in the topic.
I want to also thank my engineer and editor, A-Rod at FTC Designs. You can follow him or find him to hire him on Twitter at FTC_designs. I want to remind you that new episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. Until then, you can find me across social media platforms at Tristan Taramino. This is a really important conversation to have. I hope this started you on wanting to learn more, because ultimately that's one of my goals with the show, is having these conversations, having them out loud, and then people taking that information and seeing how they might be a part of the change. Till next time. Hey folks, I've got a little bonus content. Georgianne described in detail how circumcision is performed. So, content warning, this is graphic. But I also think it's really important for us to demystify medical procedures like this one and talk frankly about what happens to our bodies. So I've put this piece here for those who want to listen.
So to circumcise a baby, the practitioner in the U.S., usually a physician, sometimes a moil, a rabbi, and then sometimes a medical resident or even a medical student will have to sever the foreskin from the rest of the penis. And this severing the foreskin in a baby entails first separating it from the glands, the head of the penis, because it's fused to the head of the penis in a baby with exactly the same kind of tissue that your nail, your fingernail or toenail, is fused to the nail bed. So in order to detach that foreskin before it can be cut off, the doctor has to take an instrument and pry the foreskin away from the glans penis by going around the entire head of the penis with this metal instrument, which of course is excruciatingly painful to the baby. And then after forcibly separating the foreskin from the head of the penis, there are a number of different techniques that doctors can use. One that is the most common in ritual circumcisions would be a freehand removal, which would be, you know, some kind of a scalpel, and the practitioner would simply take the scalpel and sever the foreskin, going all the way around the penis until the foreskin is severed. And that's really the origin of the term circumcision. Circum means around, incision means cutting. In hospitals, more common is the use of one or another kind of a clamp to sever the foreskin. So there are several different kinds of clamps. Depends really on the preference of the physician or the practitioner. And so the Gomco clamp actually involves this metal bell that gets put over the head of the penis, and then the poor foreskin is stretched over this metal and then clamped down until the blood supply is strangled, and then he cuts around and removes the foreskin. The Mogen clamp, which is very popular in ritual Jewish circumcisions, it looks sort of like a small paper cutter to two razor sharp sections. And that instrument has been implicated in many lawsuits for accidentally severing the glands or part of the glands penis, and in order to cut off the foreskin. And the foreskin gets pulled down so that it protrudes way below the glands, which actually is natural in a baby, but it gets pulled down and cut off with the Mogen. And then a third clamp, which is almost, it's just kind of astounding the what people come up with, is called the Plastibel. And that's a clamp that goes over the head of the penis and the foreskin, there's an opening so the baby can urinate, and it's clamped, foreskin is held down by it and stays on for sometimes up to a week until the foreskin basically necrotizes, becomes dried and has no blood supply, and then falls off. And all of these techniques have a fair number of complications, but those are the three things. So at the end of the circumcision, the baby is left with a denuded glands. To the uninitiated eye, it's a horrifying sight to see this little baby with smooth, smooth, beautiful skin. And then you see this bright red, abraded penis. The head of the penis is all kind of looks like you just like your knee if you fall off the bicycle and scrape it on the sidewalk. And that's what circumcision leaves a baby with. And then it heals over a period of time if everybody's lucky. So that's a circumcision procedure.